Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is South Dakota Republican Dusty Johnson, who joins us to discuss the livestock and rural development language in the upcoming Farm Bill. But first, here's this week's headlines. The Senate voted to ban investors from China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea from buying American farmland and agricultural companies. The bill was an amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act. It also requires the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States to review any purchases larger than 320 acres or $5 million by investors from any foreign country. The language passed 91-7, but still needs to clear the House and be signed by the President before becoming law. In other news, the Environmental Protection Agency unveiled a new draft strategy to deal with a backlog of herbicides under endangered species review. The EPA is facing many lawsuits over its reviews of products and their potential impact on endangered species. Under the draft strategy, EPA would offer producers various options to mitigate the impact of certain chemicals and impose consistent restrictions on similar products. A quicker approach could offer benefits across the board. EPA says under its existing regime, completing the review of only the products in the legal system would still take until at least 2040. And finally, President Joe Biden issued a veto threat for a Republican spending bill that would cut funding for USDA and the FDA. According to the White House, the cuts go beyond what was agreed upon when the president reached a deal that raised the debt ceiling with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. But the bill's existing budget cuts did not go far enough for many House conservatives, who introduced a flurry of fiscal and social amendments that weighed heavily on the efforts of Republican House leaders to move the bill before the August recess. Congressman Dusty Johnson has emerged as an ally to House Speaker Kevin McCarthy and an influential voice on ag policy since his election in 2018. He says this appropriations process and the upcoming Farm Bill reauthorization could have some similarities.
I do think the Farm Bill is going to be quite a journey. I think there are going to be a lot of amendments. I think there'll be quite an opportunity for people to be able to offer amendments. Now, a lot of them, like, you know, eliminating checkoffs or eliminating the sugar program, will be things that I'll be opposed. And I'm pretty confident that an overwhelming majority of the House are going to be opposed to, I would say, more aggressive policy changes like that. But listen, these are a process, whether you're talking ag appropriations or farm bill, these things take some time. And just, I mean, one person can introduce an amendment, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going anywhere.
From a funding standpoint, right now we see a House Ag Appropriations bill that's already, already includes some fairly big cuts. Rescissions make back some of that, but a very different bill over in the Senate. Obviously, a Democratic president in the White House. Are you at all worried? For the sake of argument, this House bill does move. It still needs to be conferenced. Still needs to get some level of administrative agreement. Are you at all worried about a final product here and being able to get that across the finish line with probably an increase in funding as a result?
Well, number one, I wouldn't make any assumptions about increases in funding. I mean, we're $32 trillion in debt.
Well, from the current form of the House bill, not necessarily an increase in the budget necessarily.
Sure. Well, these things are a process, right? And I know that when the House has a final product, there will be all kinds of, wailing and gnashing of teeth. And there'll probably be people who run ads about how Republicans hate Americans. But listen, every reasonable person understands how these negotiations work. And so House Republicans really feel like we want to put an incredibly conservative work product out there over to the Senate to have a good position to negotiate from. And there are going to be some cuts in that bill that are not going to stick around. There are going to be some cuts in that bill that I'm not going to be supportive of, but it's a process. And in this town, so many people get worked up over what the score of the game is in the first quarter. And I just think the grownups have got to worry about what the score is at the end of the fourth quarter.
So I guess from what you've learned here in the first, 7 months of this Congress, watching the speaker vote took as long as it did, watching some of these other processes, and now watching the appropriations battles and the, conservative influence there, how does seeing all of that influence the approach you plan to take for your priorities in the upcoming Farm Bill?
Yeah, I'm amazed at the extent to which people will pay attention to the process. Now, I'm probably not real people, right? But those of us who spend at least some of our time working in Washington, D.C. And so I think, you know, again, people continue to bring up the speaker vote, and I understand why. It was historic, right? I mean, something like it had happened before, but it doesn't happen very gosh darn often. But really, that was 1 week. It was 1 week all the way back in January. And then the NDAA, the debt ceiling deal, the appropriations. Yeah, some of these take a few days to iron out. But in the whole scheme of things, they're really not that big a disruption. And so I just try to keep my eye on the prize when others want to get distracted, when others are, you know, throwing their hands up and freaking out on Monday or Tuesday because maybe things aren't exactly according to schedule. I try to remind myself that month in and month out, House Republicans have been able to deliver the product by Friday.
We'll talk farm bill priorities with Congressman Dusty Johnson right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. South Dakota Republican Dusty Johnson says recent changes in the beef cattle markets won't change his efforts to add more price transparency in the industry.
Yeah, and this is a frustration I think all of us who care about, the cattle industry should have. You know, when prices are low, it seems like everybody wants to do something. Let's do anything. And then when prices recover, kind of all of that energy dissipates. It doesn't make any sense. If there are underlying frailties within the marketplace, and I think there are some, then we should care about those regardless of what the price is that day, because prices are volatile, they're cyclical. And low prices are not an excuse for us to overreact, and high prices are not an excuse for us to underreact.
One of the ideas that you've put forward is a cattle contract library. We see a pilot of that existing at the Department of Agriculture right now. Is permanency for that program something you plan to pursue in the upcoming farm bill?
100%. We should have permanency for that program. We know that it is adding some value. No, I don't want to overstate it. I mean, it is not a silver bullet. Transparency alone can only cure so much. But clearly, the cattle contract library is giving us better insight into how that market works. And I think it's keeping people more honest. When people know that they're being watched, I think that can have a powerful effect on the efficiency and the fairness of the market. We should absolutely make the cattle contract library permanent.
I want to shift over to your subcommittee chairmanship. You've got some jurisdiction over things like rural development, and that's an area of the farm bill debate that typically isn't horribly vocal. Usually that's dealt with in some other pieces of legislation. We've seen the IRA, we've seen the bipartisan infrastructure law, we've seen that rural development pursued in those pieces of legislation as well. But how do you plan to pursue perhaps a more robust dialogue surrounding rural development in this upcoming farm bill?
It's good news that rural development is not terribly controversial. It generally means that the shared priorities that Republicans and Democrats have for helping rural America build out are going to be maintained in the farm bill. And there are, clearly, but these are things that matter, right? We want to make sure that when we're talking about rural credit, when we're talking about rural utilities, when we're talking about particularly broadband, that we are focused on making the improvements that need to be made on something like broadband. Clearly, speeds change every year. I think we want to make sure that in the next 2 months, we're having a meaningful and robust conversation about, okay, exactly what does it mean to have internet? I don't think we would count dial-up as a broadband these days, but where do you draw that line? Where should the farm bill programs draw that line?
Wrapping up here, you mentioned broadband. Obviously, it's about $65 billion in funding for that in the Inflation Reduction Act, some infrastructure law funding as well. We've also seen a number of budget deals, appropriations deals, take a crack at broadband funding. In the farm bill, is that going to be very high on your to-do list, considering the funding infusions that have happened elsewhere?
there's not going to be a tremendous amount of new money put into broadband in this farm bill. In the same way, there's not going to be a tremendous amount of new money for conservation, just because there have been other programs that, other big bills that dump so much money into those areas. But what I think we do need to do is make sure that those dollars are directed in an appropriate way. And we have an opportunity in the Farm Bill to adjust some of that language, adjust some of that policy, so we make sure that the American taxpayer is getting a good return on their investment. That's what we should always be focused on.
Congressman Johnson, thanks for joining us.
You bet. Anytime.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel. But first, our Hannah Pagel has a report on a conservation change that could be on the table in the next Farm Bill.
The next Farm Bill debate could include a big shift to the operation of the Conservation Reserve Program. Republican leaders of the House Ag Committee are exploring a change that would eliminate the program's national acreage cap and switch to a dollar-based methodology. States would be allowed to decide the acres enrolled in the program. Here's a look at CRP enrollment across the country, with each dot representing 1,000 acres. Nearly 23 million acres across the country are enrolled in the program, well below the 27 million acre cap set in the Farm Bill. Colorado, Texas, and South Dakota all have more than 2 million acres, while Nebraska and Kansas have slightly under 2 million. Another possible change on the agenda would be tweaking the Environmental Benefits Index, which is a system to maximize the program's efficacy that assigns a score to acreage offered for CRP enrollment. Supporters believe the changes will help lawmakers and USDA to better focus on conservation objectives. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Who mapped the soybean genome? You did. Who's replacing the petroleum and asphalt? You are. Who created biodiesel that increased your income 63 cents per bushel? You again. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales. You're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff, moving soy forward, moving you forward.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Going to continue our Farm Bill conversation with a couple of panelists, joined this week by Todd Van Hoos with the Farm Credit Council and Ethan Lane with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Appreciate both of you taking the time. And Todd, I want to go to you first, because typically when we talk about the Farm Bill, we talk about things like rural development. There isn't a ton of conversation there, but we have seen rural development emphasized in some other pieces of legislation, among them the infrastructure law, the Inflation Reduction Act, a lot of funding directed toward rural development in those bills. With all of that in mind, how are you and how is Farm Credit hoping to see lawmakers and maybe some of your fellow ag groups approach RD here in this upcoming Farm Bill?
Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned the infrastructure bill, because we led an effort called Rebuild Rural that pointed out that the infrastructure needs in rural America are very different. And we were successful in getting some rural development money into that infrastructure bill. So that's a very good thing. But this farm bill is also going to address rural development. And it's very important, because increasingly we see agriculture and rural communities interdependent on each other. If we're going to have people stay in rural America and farm, we're going to have vibrant rural communities. And that means healthcare, that means educational processes, that means broadband, it means clean water. All those things are addressed in the rural development title. We think it's very important.
As you drill down on some of the specifics of that rural development title, anything in particular we should be watching for in terms of farm credit priorities in this upcoming reauthorization?
We sure do have some. We have two special that we talk a lot about. One is the ability to support for farm credit system institutions in partnership with community banks to support more rural community facilities. Things like healthcare, walk-in clinics, senior care facilities, child care facilities, the kind of things that make a community vibrant out there. And we've been doing some of that on a very limited basis for a while. We'd like to make that permanent law to make sure that we can really support those institutions and make those communities more vibrant. In addition to that, we're looking at some rural business investment priorities where you have a dearth of equity investment opportunities and equity investors who want to put their money to work in rural communities. We think that's very important. And Farm Credit this past year, in cooperation with USDA and other investors, announced that rural business investment companies had put out $1 billion in equity investment for rural businesses. We'd like to see that improved as well.
So, Ethan, transferring over to you here, as we look at the fact that a lot of other things to be discussed in the Farm Bill, and of course, NCBA's membership gathering in San Diego this week to kind of sort through its own policy book. And some of those NCBA meetings, as you well know, in recent years, have involved a discussion about price discovery and sorting through some legislative potential solutions there. Some folks wondering, now that the cattle market has changed a little bit better live cattle prices for producers, then maybe the price discovery conversation won't be as prevalent in this upcoming Farm Bill. Where does NCBA stand on that subject? Is NCBA still pursuing some price discovery fixes?
We haven't had any real discussion about price discovery in our policy committees for several years now. And by that, I mean, we don't have any states that are looking for additional policy work at NCBA on that topic. I think we sort of exhausted that conversation at the height of COVID with those market contractions that we saw, with those price differentials between what the packers were receiving and what our producers were receiving for product. The cattle contract library, which was kind of an outgrowth of that, has been a large part of where we are now in that conversation, looking at the transparency tools that have been put into place, looking at whether that information is generating benefit for our producers, looking at whether they have the scope of that contract library correct as we move towards sort of the end of that pilot program. But I think that older conversation sort of setting limits on cash trade and targets or government intervention in the marketplace in that way really isn't a current conversation anymore.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association is one of several farm groups vocally opposing an amendment on Capitol Hill regarding checkoff programs. NCBA lobbyist Ethan Lane says expect advocacy on that front to continue.
Well, we're seeing a lot of new actors to that conversation. We're seeing the traditional folks that kind of in our own industries that don't like the checkoffs. But we're now seeing all of these sort of new animal rights focus groups that have really made getting rid of the checkoffs a priority, and it's fine for them to use the word reform, but when the net effect of that reform is eliminating those commodities' ability to promote themselves, they're gutting the checkoff programs. And I know they don't like that characterization, but that's reality. And that's, I think, why you're seeing so much more conversation about this, is we're seeing those large animal rights groups fund smaller sort of AstroTurf type groups. We're seeing these new groups come out of nowhere that are claiming to speak for farmers and ranchers, yet don't seem to have any farmers and ranchers in their mix. But they're showing up, they're very much in the media, they're spending a lot of money on ad campaigns, they're engaging quite a bit. So I think that's necessitating everybody in agriculture that works on these types of programs to ensure that the truth is out there, that members are being educated about the realities of how these programs work.
On the Farm Bill, obviously NCBA has a handful of priorities, among them conservation programs, a vaccine bank, risk management for producers, but also facing a very tight budget situation. Any concerns on your end about the level of support NCBA's priorities will be able to receive based on that tight budget situation?
Well, I think that ought to be at the top of everybody's list for those priorities in the Farm Bill. That's a tough task for Chairman Thompson and Chairman Stabenow to navigate the needs of everybody in agriculture, as well as the nutrition program, with that limited budget. And, you know, we're watching those tight budget conversations play out on the appropriation side right now. And I think it would be naive to believe that those same types of strict fiscal discipline type mentalities aren't going to apply in the Farm Bill conversation as well. We understand the need for fiscal discipline, but we also need to make sure that those bases get covered. And I think the chairman and his team are working towards exactly that goal. Every time we talk to him, that's what he reiterates. You know, there are no sacred cows. He keeps talking about the fact that he wants to be really logical in how they go through that, and we appreciate that approach.
Todd, I want to wrap up with you and wrap up on a bit of a different topic. This week, we did see news from the Federal Reserve deciding to raise interest rates. Not the first time we've seen that happen here in the last year as the Fed seeks to curb inflation. But, you know, maybe looking a little bit more broadly than just specifically interest rates, with the fact that that has taken place, with the fact that, you know, operating loans are kind of in the middle of that season for a lot of producers right now, what are the key indicators, the key factors that you and Farm Credit are going to be watching, you know, in this interest rate environment, just to gauge the health of the farm economy going forward?
Well, we're looking at margins, and that irrespective of the interest rate, we're looking at margins, and you've got a lot of pressure out there. And you know, maybe 10 years from now, if we look back, we think, boy, those were three great years that we just came out of, and maybe these next few years are going to be tougher. But no doubt, if you financed your operating line this year, it costs you a whole lot more than it did last year. And we're doing everything we can to keep those interest rates down on the retail level, but we're paying the same thing for our money that we're passing along. And so it's just a very difficult environment. And we see, if there were ever an argument for another strong farm bill, it's right now. If you look forward, things are going to get tougher in agriculture. So we need that good, strong farm bill to create the kind of safety net that'll keep our producers moving.
Well, as you mentioned, we'll have to see where interest rates land. We'll have to see where the Farm Bill lands. A number of things to keep an eye on just in this conversation, but we'll have to do that at another time. Todd and Ethan, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Hannah Pegel has a look at a big drop being observed in farm country in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
The nation's cattle inventory is shrinking, and many producers are reaping the financial benefits. According to USDA, total U.S. cattle inventory is down 3% from this time last year. This chart shows July reports for the number of cattle and calves in the U.S. from 1998 to this month. The gaps in 2013 and 2016 were caused by a lack of funding for the reports in that time frame. USDA's report shows there were just under 96 million head of cattle and calves on July 1st. Nearly every category in the report showed declines, including a 3% year-over-year drop for the country's herd of beef and dairy replacement heifers. As you can see, the current contraction in the cattle cycle began in 2020. Prices have been on the rise ever since. Many producers are taking advantage of the high prices, but some have been forced to sell due to drought and high input costs. Despite the price increases for live cattle, meatpackers still need to keep their plants up and running, translating to thinner margins for packing plants and higher prices for consumers. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Who mapped the soybean genome? You did. Who's replacing the petroleum and asphalt? You are. Who created biodiesel that increased your income 63 cents per bushel? You again. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales, you're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff, moving soy forward, moving you forward.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The House and Senate will be in the first week of a month-long August recess, but the House Ag Committee plans to hold a Farm Bill listening session Monday in Maine. Back in Washington, USDA on Friday will release its annual report on agricultural land values. We'll have the latest on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.